Morning, it's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and the greatest of the world of the automobile. We'll talk NASCAR news, IndyCar news from Long Beach last weekend, Talladega this weekend, the big track down in Alabama where NASCAR is racing. An interesting article about the Tucker automobile. Only 50 of those cars were built, and this is a story about one of them. A very interesting story regarding the 11th million Chevy truck built at the plant in Indiana. Five muscle cars now that have depreciated enough that you might actually be able to afford them. Of course, we'll talk about what's going on with gas prices, and it wouldn't be The Car Show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Well, from the pages of Slash Gear, which is a website that I cruise often, five of the coolest cars have now depreciated enough to make them affordable. Over the years, there's always been a handful of cars that come out and stop us in our tracks, and someday we hope to be behind the wheel of one of those cars. It's often the case that those are high-priced cars, and they're not always in everyone's budget. Well, most of these cars are always the case with the new cars. Natural depreciation that faces all cars soon leaves these dealerships, and soon the cars that we fell in love with are actually within our reach. Now, the price of these vehicles have been rising, particularly in several months. There's no signs of stopping. According to KBB, the average price of a new car in the early months of 2026 was $49,191. With the doubts of cars costing around $20,000 could still be a thing. Some cars are still relatively cheap and in the low 20s. Those aren't exactly the ones that leave your hair standing on the back of your neck if you're looking in the new car section. But luckily, some of the coolest sports cars that were class-leading at their original time are now below $20,000, providing a lot of thrills on a budget. Here's a closer look at five of the cars that we've chosen. The first one, the 2014 Jaguar F-Type. In the early 2010s, Jaguar did still have cars that kept the branding in their performance styling segment, notably the XK. Dropping some of the luxury from the Grand Tour, the F-Type was designed to bring back Jaguar in the forefront of the sports car marketplace. And 12 years later, you can pick one of these up at a fraction of its original price. We love that the final 2024 model was a car that we reviewed, and it can't be called affordable in any stretch. The 2014 F was a little bit more affordable than its closest rivals. Originally priced at $70,000 in its base trim, it now sells for an average of just under $20,000 at $19,350. So if you've got a slightly bigger budget, the $25,000 for the V8, while depreciation of luxury brands is high, CarEdge reports that the F-Type holds only about 25% of its original value, driven by factors such as reliability. Despite those fears, plenty of owners cite reliable experiences with their early F-Types, potentially making these cars one of the best steals in the two-door sports car marketplace. Looking at specifications on different F-Types in 2014, the standard V6 produced 340 horsepower. Pay a little bit of extra money for the V8, now you're getting up to nearly 500 horsepower. Well, the 2008 Mitsubishi Lancer Evolution X. In the 2000s, sedans were produced with the various manufacturers, arguably some of the best that you could buy at the time. One of these brands was Mitsubishi, which ushered in its first generation Lancer in 2008. Only after 5 years after the model was introduced stateside, the specific Lancer at the top of the pile once again was the Evolution, and this was the Evolution X. Being designed to compete in rally, every aspect of this car worked in harmony to provide perfect balance, only traditionally reserved for two-door coupes. Perhaps one of the standouts was the 2008 Evo X, particularly an all-wheel drive system, reviewers noting how well it manages and was able to drive without losing any grip. This car utilizes things like active yaw control and center differential to stay planted as possible under the hood. The Evolution X had a 2-liter that produced nearly 300 horsepower. It's not much of a surprise to see the GSRs more widely available, and plenty of those falling under $20,000. but on a recent sale, Classic.com gives the average price of $17,600 for the 2008 Evolution X. Some low mileage cars even cross over, getting into the 20,000s. The 2012 Ford Mustang, which happens to be one of my favorites. Moving over to the American muscle cars that have become a great deal, we go to Mustang, one of the few gasoline-powered muscle cars still in production. You could actually bought a brand new one of these for about $32,000, almost $20,000 below the KBB reported price of a new car early in 2026. Still spending $30,000 at the time was a hefty amount, and turning older models that can still hold up and get a good value. Now, having a wide variety of trims is commonplace for modern Mustangs. For the 2012 model, the pony car could have been pretty cheap. KBB reports that there are some prices used as low as $10,000. Now, the GT, that comes in at about $16,000. The Boss 302 at $18,000. And the Shelby GT500, one of the rarest ones, about $26,000 on average. Now, performance is expected to be big gaps between these models. The standard Mustang V6, still decent, producing 305 horsepower. Now, the GT with the V8, well, that gets you up to 412, and the 302 Boss topping those out at 444 horsepower. The 2013 Nissan 370ZX. So, one of the two-door models that was mentioned in this segment earlier, moving into 2010s, was the 370Z. I had a 300Z at the back in the day. Building off of the architecture of the 350Z, the coupe was unveiled in 2008 until it was discontinued in 2020. Through its life, the Z refused a few key updates, and most notably a modern facelift in 2013, but it wasn't a major overhaul. The model still looked good and was a great value on a budget. Another positive is the 2013 370Z still has improved reliability, resolving some of the issues like steering oil gasket issues in its earlier models. The 2012 model also saw improvements, but you won't get the facelift on that model. 2013 had a solid MSRP at the time, $33,900. But in 2026, you can pick one of these up for around $18,000. One of the areas that the 370 recently fell behind its rivals is not having updated the cabin for the segment. So if you don't mind having more of a basic style and simply prefer something more analog, the car's handling and its 332 horse output makes it a proper driver car. The 2015 Dodge Challenger. Now, if you want a beefier, more traditional muscle car on a budget compared to the likes of the Mustang, the now extinct Dodge Challenger may be your answer. Now, it's not the Challenger that has been off the market for ages. It was only discontinued in 2024, making way for the new Dodge Charger, which is now Dodge's only muscle car. The new Charger is much closer to the outgoing Challenger, but a $49,000 price tag doesn't make this car that affordable. However, you go back 11 years to the 2015 Challenger, and you can unlock plenty of performance and style that isn't too far off of Dodge's current offering. As a standard 2015 Dodge Challenger produces 305 horsepower from a 3.6-liter V6 and can be picked up for an average of $13,700 on average with KBB. If you get the RT trim and with a V8 producing 372 horsepower, about $16,000, then with the Scat Pack package with a 6.4-liter V8 and producing almost 500 horsepower, you can pick one of these up for almost $20,000, which is not bad considering all the pricing you get and performance you get with these cars. Now, the basic idea on the methodology on how they chose these cars to select the car that could be on this list, we had to make sure that they could be purchased well below $20,000 average, and that puts them well below the current market value of an average car in the United States, which is nearly $15,000, and they used KBB as their pricing point. So that's a great group of cars, and I guess I would think of these if I was picking one of those. Even though I've been a Mustang guy, I think for the reliability and performance and value, I think the 2013 Nissan 370Z is the pick of the litter of these five. Headline reads, GM truck plant just built its 11th million vehicle, and that one went to an employee. Well, General Motors continues to meet the large, continues to meet a large share of the U.S. pickup truck market, supported by extensive domestic assembly plants here in the United States. One of its key facilities is its Fort Wayne assembly plant in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and is now celebrating its 11th million vehicle produced. And that example was purchased by a GM employee, Ken Zawilla. Now, the Fort Wayne assembly plant builds primarily light-duty versions of the Chevy Silverado and the GMC Sierra. Both pickup trucks are due for a major overhaul in the 2027 model year, which reports suggest that the production could begin as early as October of 2026. However, right now, the plant is making a notable milestone since its establishment in 1986. Now, the 11th million vehicle is a black Chevy Silverado 1500 High Country, the flagship luxury trim with its ZR2 serving as the performance-focused alternative. With a report from the Wayndale News, it didn't disclose the full specs, but this model comes with standard features like 20-inch machined aluminum wheels, chrome accents, a 10-way power seat for the driver, a 13-inch touchscreen, and a Bose premium sound system under the hood. A 5-liter Ecotec V8 is standard, while the more potent 6.2-liter is available with 420 horsepower. Now, speaking about historic examples, Zawilla said that it was exciting to find out that my truck was the 11th million vehicle. I probably told about 100 people that of this milestone. I'm a proud GM employee, and we built many awesome trucks here at this plant. As an employee of the Fort Wayne Assembly, we are building something every day that's important to a lot of our customers. Now, Indiana Governor Mike Braun also attended the celebration of the 11th million vehicle produced. Beyond building the high-demand pickup trucks for the U.S. market, the plant also continues to support the state's economy by providing more than 4,000 jobs. Now, development follows last month's announcement that the GM Flint assembly plant that builds heavy-duty versions of the GM Silverado and the GMC pickup truck produced its 16th million vehicle. GM also remains America's largest pickup truck leader. Six consecutive years has built the largest amount of pickup trucks sold in the U.S. for the second year in a row, beating its rivals including Ford, Stellantis, and Toyota. So congratulations, 11th million truck built at the Fort Wayne plant in Indiana. The headline reads, this failed company's sole crown jewel vehicle is now a collector's item. Modern exotic cars are intentionally made in scarce supply, but this particular model dates back to 1948 when only 51 examples left the production facilities. Well, small automakers come and go, but few leave the legacy that managed to claim this crown as just a handful of collections. That fate was the Tucker 48, which briefly was known as the Tucker Torpedo. Just 51 examples managed to roll off the production line before the manufacturers closed its doors amid a slew of scandals. While the Tucker Corporation may be long gone, its sole vehicle and its innovative design is extremely rare and is now ensured that the company's name will survive the test of time. Well, reinventing the American car. At the end of World War II marked a turning point for the entire automotive industry, and Preston Tucker brought that reinvention to the American car. Tucker's ambition was undeniable. After spending time at Cadillac in the engineering office and on the Ford assembly line before ending up in auto sales at Pierce Arrow, it was his role as a regional sales manager that teamed up with Harry Miller, a former race car engineer, to build a car built to build car for Henry Ford. Now, Miller died in 1943. By that time, Tucker had already become known in the automotive industry. Despite spending time at Cadillac and Ford, Tucker was really never part of the big three that dominated the American car industry. An outsider, he was interested in inventing the car of tomorrow and put a spotlight on safety. Following the war, the American public yearned for new car designs, an area that the big three had neglected since 1941 because of the World War II. Tucker seized the opportunity and founded the Tucker Corporation in Chicago in July of 1946. No matter any way you look at it, the Tucker 48 was truly the car of tomorrow. Not just a reinvention, but a brand new style. It was the first vehicle to feature a rear-engine, rear-wheel drive configuration in the United States. The headlamps also turned with the front wheels. Tucker also added a third headlight that would be activated when turning the vehicle's path around corners and curves. Notably, more than a dozen states had banned the cars because it had more than two headlights, so Tucker created a cover for the center headlight to circumvent those bans. Now, the Tucker 48 pushed the boundaries of safety with a stock perimeter frame for crash protection and an integrated roll bar. The steering box was also positioned behind the front axle, and the dashboard was padded. The Tucker 48 also came with a shatterproof windshield that could be popped out in the event of an accident. Interesting that the engine and the transmission were only secured to the subframe by 6 bolts, allowing the entire powertrain to be removed in just a few minutes. Initially, Tucker tried his hand at developing an entirely new engine with the help of Ben Parsons. The end result was a massive 9-liter flat-six engine that produced 200 horsepower and 400 pounds of foot torque at just 1,800 RPM. But the engine was plagued with problems, and only 6 prototypes were built. 5 of those were utilized in test chassis. The final engine was installed in the first Tucker 48 prototype. Now, perhaps most notably, each Tucker 48 preserved as a prototype and featured concepts and implemented either improved or removed from production in the process. As a result, the parts are often not interchangeable between two cars because of those major changes. Unfortunately, Tucker's ambition was met with resistance from all sides. In order to secure funding, he had to sell dealership rights to the tune of $7,000 to $30,000 each. He also sold vehicle accessories before Tucker Corporation had even built a single car. Not long after, he was charged with fraud by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, although he was eventually acquitted of those charges. Tucker's ambitions turned out to be a double-edged sword. His failure to make good on his promises did hurt his credibility. The Tucker 48's price was controversial early on. Tucker claimed the first production vehicles would cost around $1,000, but that number quickly ballooned to over $4,000. Production itself was a problem itself, as Tucker had difficulty getting the resources required, and he didn't have a large-scale production facility in place. Naturally, the media picked up on this story, and some outlets claimed that the vehicles were a fraud. Public perception shifted as a result, and according to Tucker, political and industrial figures, primarily the Big Three of Detroit, were conspiring against him. Unfortunately, the damage had been done. Press picked up on the story. Investors lost confidence, causing the Tucker Corporation to collapse in 1949. Well, thanks to the Tucker Corporation's short-lived production line, just 50 examples of the Tucker 48 made it to the road, but the prototype brings that number to number 51, and due to its limited supply, the Tucker 40 is extremely hard to find, making it a crown jewel of anyone's collection. And most notably, Francis Ford Coppola, which directed the film Tucker, The Man and His Dream. Coppola has since owned a Tucker 48 that was in the movie. In addition to its time on screen, the 28th Tucker 48 was one of 7 models to be run through an endurance testing at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It sold for auction at a surprising $1.5 million price. Despite its rarity, Tucker 48s surprisingly are not all that uncommon. The 40th example of the Tucker 48 went to auction in January of 2019 and sold for a healthy $1.6 million. And a Tucker 48 hit the auction block in 2012, 2014, and 2020, the latter fetching $2 million. So the Tucker lives on. It's a very cool car. It was way ahead of its time. And I agree, General Motors was scared by this car, and they definitely, the Big Three were scared of this car, and they definitely squashed it. Some NASCAR news from last week, and the headline reads, Reddick conjures more magic in Kansas with overtime win. Well, Tyler Reddick scraped the outside wall in the closing laps. His fuel system stumbled at a critical moment. He collided with fellow Toyota driver Christopher Bell in overtime. He fell behind defending NASCAR champion Kyle Larson on the final restart. Yet, the magical season for the driver of the number 45 2311 Racing Toyota Reddick won Sunday's running of the Advent Health 400 at Kansas Speedway, despite all these adversities. Well, the catalyst was Cody Ware's spin on lap 266, which started all this incident, caused the third caution of the race after Denny Hamlin had retaken the lead from Tyler Reddick, who switched to pump two on his Camry after his car sputtered with two laps left. Ware's spin sent the race into overtime, and all 16 cars on the lead lap came to pit row for tires. Hamlin, Reddick, Larson, Christopher Bell, Bubba Wallace, and five other cars behind them taking right side tires only. Moments after the restart, Larson steered to the inside of Hamlin in the bottom row, charged the lead. Reddick fell behind after his contact with Bell's Toyota and forced Bell in the outside wall. But the outside lane opened up again for Reddick, whose handling was superior to Larson in overtime. Reddick mustered a huge run on the top lane, drove to the inside of Larson's Chevrolet, which tightened up on corner entry. Reddick cleared Larson in the final two corners and crossed the finish line 1/10 of a second ahead of him. So the magical season for Tyler Reddick just continues. He's won 5 races out of 9 so far. It's just incredible. So Tyler Reddick wins. Kyle Larson finishes in second. Chase Briscoe, third. Denny Hamlin, fourth. And rounding out the top 5 was Bubba Wallace. Well, NASCAR will be in Talladega, Alabama today. The qualifying was rained out, so they go by the last wins. So Tyler Reddick will start on the pole today at Talladega, and you can catch that race on Fox Sports 1, and that starts at noon today. Well, I was in Long Beach, California last weekend for the running of the Long Beach Grand Prix with my buddy Doug, and once again, Long Beach does not disappoint. The weather was fabulous, the crowd was huge, and the people were great. And from the pages of Racer, it says, Pitch Perfect Pillow comes through once again with a Long Beach IndyCar win. Well, 4-time and defending NTT IndyCar Series champion Alex Pillow scored his third win of the 2026 season and drove to the win at the 51st Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach after beating pole sitter Felix Rosenquist in the pits. The man he replaced at Chip Ganassi Racing in 2021, Felix Rosenquist, led the majority of the laps in a largely follow-the-leader two-stop race, but during the race's sole caution period, the number 10 Ganassi crew got Pillow out ahead of their counterparts on pit row, and after that, it was all over. We were talking to my buddy Doug, and I said, if Pillow gets past him in the pits, if he gets past Rosengarten, it's going to be all over. And it absolutely was. He just walked away and ended up winning by, gosh, almost 6 seconds. But the weather was great. Only one caution, and that's unusual in a street course race. Normally there's a lot more cautions. So Alex Pillow wins the race. Felix Rosenquist finishes in second. Scott Dixon finishes in third. Kyle Kirkwood, who won the race last year, was finished in fourth. And one of my favorite drivers, Pato O'Ward, finished in fifth. And the next thing we'll be talking about is IndyCars at Indianapolis. Our gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $4.09. Here in Arizona, $4.63. New Mexico, $3.90. Colorado, $3.95. Utah, $4.16. Nevada, $5.03. California, $5.93. Average gas, almost $6 a gallon. That's just crazy. As we head to the east, Texas, $3.67. Oklahoma, $3.50. Arkansas, $3.59. Our friends in Louisiana paying $3.68 average. As we're going to be heading east on the 11th of May, heading to Indiana for the Indy 500 and to see friends and family, it'll be interesting to see how we cross Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. And right now, average gas price in Indiana is $3.78. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Arizona. Gas prices here in Arizona. How about this, folks? The least expensive gas in the state is actually here in Metro Phoenix, the Sam's Club in Tempe on Rio Salado Parkway, $3.50 a gallon. That's a huge gas price. That's awesome. That's incredibly cheap considering what's going on right now. The Costco in Gilbert on Arizona Avenue at $3.55. The Speedway Station in Fort Defiance at $3.73. The Speedway in St. Michael's at 373. For those of you who don't know where those places are located, because I had to double check on the map, they're up on the Arizona-New Mexico border, up near Gallup by the reservation. The Costco in Phoenix on Beardsley is at 389. The Costco on 27th Avenue at 389. 389 at the Sam's Club on West Bell Road. And the TA Travel Center in Eloy at $3.99 a gallon. So there's gas out there under $4, but folks, $3.50 at Sam's Club in Tempe. If you have a Sam's Club card, that's your place to get some cheap gas. Well, we've reached that time of the show. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, when going straight, the steering wheel of my 2014 Acura RDX is turned about 15 degrees to the right. Is this within tolerance, or is there something that needs to be fixed? Maybe like an alignment question? And that's from Dave. Well, yeah, Dave, it's within tolerance if you're driving a demolition derby car, or you have a teenage son who recently got his license. But for whatever reason, something in this car needs fixing. And no, it's not within tolerance, and certainly not within my tolerances. It sounds like your front wheels have had a violent interaction with an immovable object. Could have been a curbstone, a nasty pothole, or a linebacker for the Green Bay Packers. But when it hit the object, something connected with your front wheels got bent. And you want to go to a shop that does front end work and have them start by taking a look at the damage, and it may be obvious to them when they put it up on the rack. I'd put my money on a bent tie rod. Now, the bent tie rod will cause the wheels and the steering wheel to point off center. And then, in order to go straight, you have to turn the wheel, and in your case, turn it to the right. If they find a bent tie rod, well, they'll replace it, and then they'll try to align your car. That's why it's good to make sure you have it done at a shop that has an alignment machine. That's critical. Now, if they can't get it into alignment, well, that means you bent more than one thing, and the shop will have to figure that out, and what else is keeping the car from being able to be aligned correctly. But the most thing, hopefully, it is a single bent inner tie rod, and that will cost you probably in the range of $500 to $300 to get fixed, and then another $150 to $200 for the alignment. And then your days of driving askew will be over. Yeah, nothing like having your car wanting to pull to one side of the road or the other. And certainly, if your steering wheel is not straight aligned into the center of the car, it looks like it's turning left or to the right when you're going straight down the road, that's a problem. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.